Employers across the UK, however small the business, will soon have to offer a workplace pension. Don't ignore the workplace pension. It's the law. Visit workplacepensions.gov.uk.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ann, how are you?
Russell, doing well. How are you, sir?
It's a good time of the year. A lot of good hockey going on. The weather's almost getting ready to warm up. We're going to get a little snow on Sunday, and then smooth sailing after that is what I'm told. So it's getting nice. Hockey's getting tense. And, you know, now we're going to have to break down what's going on with the Edmonton Oilers. Why aren't they any better with Connor McDavid? And we've got two great guests. We've got Paul Almeida and Alan Mitchell. It's funny because one called in before the other, and I wasn't sure who was who. I was gonna say, is this the good looking one? But I didn't have to do that there for PSN 1260. How are you guys?
Very good. Well. It's a very slow race to the good looking one. Let me tell you. it's like a rail and a rail. It's the tortoise and the other tortoise.
That's okay. Tortoise and the other tortoise. So to answer the first question, we'll kind of do this round table. We'll start with Paul. How could the Edmonton Oilers not even be any better with Connor McDavid?
Oh, my gosh. Where do I start? As a season ticket holder for the last 10 years, I've got a long list. But I think it's just... This year has been a combination, again, of just such dumb injuries, especially to the back end. And they really didn't do much in the off season to make their back end better. And that's the principal reason why. I mean, they have forwards. They're finally getting some bigger forwards to play with some of the talent to give them a little bit of space and to be a little bit heavier team, especially in this division. You're not going to win with all small guys. And the biggest thing, again, is the defense. You need to upgrade that defense. They're going to do it this summer. I think Chiarelli's had a year to look at what he's got to work with. I think maybe he listened to some people in the organization before the year started, gave some guys the benefit of the doubt. And I think now he knows exactly what he's got in front of him, and he'll make some changes. He's already started to make some changes in terms of the size of the hockey team, the competitiveness of the hockey team, as has Todd McLellan. I think now the major step is to upgrade that defense, bringing in probably two defensemen.
Alan, what's your thoughts?
I think that's fair. I do believe that the Oilers, there was a period of time in this year where they could have gone out and gotten a little bit of help for this team. It's been an ongoing crisis for this organization. They, you know, there are opportunities to pick players up, and they go, well, let's see what we have. And I guess I understand that with Peter Chiarelli, and you know, he's a new general manager. He wanted to see all the young players, but this is a team that has been really short at least one, probably two defensemen since Chris Pronger left town in the summer of '06. And there's a stubbornness that the Oilers organization has, that they have for many, many years acted like they're the smartest man in the room. And this goes back to not just ownership and management, but there's a sense, I think, of the Oilers organization, the old boys network, Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, of we know better, we know what we're doing, we'll just sit here and do things our way. And because of that, there's been no real rush to go out and get four defensemen or five defensemen. And really, I you know, Daryl Cates took over the team, I think, in the summer of 08. And you know, inexperienced general manager, experienced assistant general manager, but inexperienced general manager in Steve Tambellini, and then a very inexperienced GM in Craig McTavish. And I just think they did not hire themselves a veteran general manager until Peter Chiarelli last April. And you know, it's a little disappointing the year, but I'm encouraged overall because they finally have a guy who is aware of what a team looks like, and he's going to add defense, and it's going to be painful for fans. But they finally have an adult in the room when the big decisions are made, and I hope that he's the guy who gets to make the decisions because you never know with the Oilers.
Ant, you're up.
Guys, over – Guys, over time, I know obviously you're looking outside the organization for defensive help. Do you think over time, though, that a defenseman like Darnell Nurse can will be able to sort of take the reins? I know you focused a lot on, you know, the loss of Pronger, but in looking at Nurse over the long term, do you think he's that bellwether guy that you can kind of hang on and look at and say, this is the guy that the blue line is going to be built off of. He'll be the backbone, the spine of it.
Well, I think there's two. I think there's Nurse and there's Clefbaum, and nobody's going to hand you a number one defenseman in this league. That's the number one thing. Some fans here are, you know, hoping that the Oilers magically trade for Oliver Ekman-Larsson or Shea Weber or somebody like that. Teams don't trade those type of players. You've got to develop your own defenseman, and they have two guys that are capable of being top pairing guys in Clefbaum and Nurse. They have to be patient with them. You know, the thing in Edmonton has been for the longest time bringing guys into the organization and playing them heavy minutes on defense before they're ready for it. We saw it here with Jeff Petrie. We saw it with Justin Schultz. This year, Darnell Nurse was playing a ton. They've backed off some of his minutes recently. But one guy, we go back to the defense, the guy that they've missed the most this year when they've had injuries all throughout the roster has been Oscar Clefbaum. He's their best defenseman when he's on the ice. And he's a guy, along with Nurse, that they have to develop, but they also have to bring in some guys. There are veteran guys. Sekera was a good add, but they need to add one or two more guys to stabilize that defense and give those guys the opportunity to grow into that number one defenseman.
All right, so here's the question. Go ahead, Alan, sorry.
That's okay. I was just going to say the Oilers traded Chris Pronger. One of the players they got back was Ladislav Smead. Smead's rookie season, very much like Nurse's. These kids are just overwhelmed. You know, tonight's game, you've got Sekera and Fain playing well, and then the other four defensemen are just scrambling. And we've been watching it for a decade, and it's you know, the only galling thing is that so is the management.
It's true. All right, so here's the question that has been posed to me. You know, I'm here on the East Coast, but I am a prospect guy, so I've gotten this question 10 times this year, and that is, if the Oilers get the number one pick, would they trade it? And my answer is, no, they would draft Austin Matthews, and they would move other assets because he'd instantly become, like, their second-best player. Maybe their third-best, if you want to count Drysdale ahead of him, that's fine. So why would they trade down to get a defenseman when they could get another generational player? So for me, I think that's what they would do, but Paul, I'll let you go and tell me if you think they'd do otherwise.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade the first, second, or third overall pick if I'm the Oilers. I would draft that guy. Number one, it gives you cap flexibility. You don't have to pay that guy a lot of money for 3 years. And then that opens the door for you to move Jordan Eberle to get a defenseman. And I think of the guys that the Oilers have, the younger guys, I would not trade any of the centers. I would not trade Nugent Hopkins, Dreisaitl, and of course nobody would ever trade McDavid in the right mind. And the other guy that I wouldn't move is Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall and McDavid are the two guys that drive play on this hockey team more than anybody.
Yeah,
and
I had an argument with someone
lines,
the other day. I had an argument with someone the other day because they said they would trade Taylor Hall, and I was like, why would you trade him? He does nothing but play flat-out hockey. Every minute he's on the ice, he's fast, he's strong, he's big. Like, he would be, like you said, one of the last guys I would ever think about trading, but there are people out there that think they should trade him. It's crazy.
Well, the four, you know, I have six guys I would never trade, and it's the three centers, Taylor Hall and Nurse and Clefbaum. Everybody else I'm open to.
I think that you know, my feeling on the first overall pick is that it would depend to me on what value you could get for him. I agree with what Paul said earlier. I don't think you're going to get a generational or a number one type defenseman. Those guys are, you know, teams don't trade them. You could get a Seth Jones for a center of similar ilk, but that's not, you know, Jones may develop into that player. I think the Oilers are in a position right now where they could afford to, if they feel as though the difference between Matthews and Line A isn't much, and they would like Line A because I think he might sit into the Eberle position a little easier. If they feel that's close and they're getting a great offer to move from one to two, then you would consider that. But beyond that, I honestly can't see. You'd want a king's ransom for that, and I would trade it if I thought I could get more than I could for Eberle, and it was a perfect fit. I would do it, but I think it's unlikely.
Guys, with regards to, I know the Oilers for a while there have been sort of in major search mode for a goaltender, and seems like they may have finally hit on a starting goaltender. It coincidentally with Russ's old team, the New York Rangers, with Cam Talbot. I know there's been some talk, obviously, that you need to get some goaltending depth in the system. But speak to, you know, what Talbot has done this season for the Oilers and what's given them a lot of confidence in him going forward.
He was poor, I'll say, the first little while, and then he settled in. It's hard to play goal for the Oilers because, you know, they're a little there's a lot of chaos. So if you're the goaltender, pucks are coming at you from everywhere. And Talbot had a little bit of a crisis of confidence. I will give him absolute credit. He really responded to it. And I think he really, there was a period where Anders Nilsson was playing a lot. In fact, Nilsson looked like the number one guy. And instead of sulking about it, what Talbot did was he worked hard. And when he came back, he played extremely well. And I think it's, you know, I would like to see them add a veteran backup or an option, but I think he's gone a long way to help them solve a really, really long-term problem. I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, I think he's better than a lot of goalies that have come through here in the last 10 years, that's for sure. He did have a rough start, but since about mid-December, he's settled down and he's been really, really good. I would still like to hedge my bets in the offseason and get a capable backup, not just a capable backup, but a guy that can maybe push him for some starts. You'd be able to tell me better, Russ, but you know what I hear is that he's usually a slow starter. And
he
the
is.
One thing that this team could, and the one thing that this team could not go through again next year that he had this year is a slow start to the season. This is a fragile hockey team, and even if they do add a defenseman or two, they can't go into October and have an October where they're 3-7. They need capable goaltending, strong goaltending right off the bat starting next year.
I think he'd be okay if they add the two defensemen because part of the secret for him was he's a really good positional goalie, but he does have to have a better defense than he has in front of him right now. And I think if he had that, he wouldn't get off to such a slow start. I mean, I just think we don't know enough about him to say that that's going to be every year. That just happened to be what happened in New York. But I think that if he had the right defense in front of him, I think things could change. But I'll tell you, as far as defensemen in this draft, you're not going to get a generational defenseman in this draft, even if you know, you're getting one in 4 or 5 or 6. You're going to get a nice defenseman. They might be better than Klefbom, but they're not going to be, you know, a Drew Doughty type. So that's the other thing is, and that's why I think you're right by saying go ahead and get free agent defenseman. And still, you should always draft defenseman. The one thing I looked at was last couple of years before last year, the Oilers hadn't drafted that many defensemen at all. And so they just are devoid of a lot of guys just in their system. So they almost need to do what the Islanders did one year, not to the extreme where you want to draft a defenseman every round, but get quite a few.
Yeah, they did a little bit of that last year after the third, fourth round. But I agree with you. I think that you always want to have, and I would say that you know, some of these college kids that are there's a kid, Stetcher, with North Dakota. I mean, I'd like to see the Oilers go after that guy. I know he's a smaller player, but they, you know, they don't have a lot. You know, they don't have a lot in the system. It's surprising, you know, that they've had a problem for so long and they haven't addressed it, but they really haven't. I mean, they don't have a lot. And part of it is what Paul said about they're always trying to get these kids right into the NHL and playing big minutes, and it never works.
The other side of it, too, is you could say the Oilers got the first overall pick in a couple of wrong years. I mean, Ekblad would look very nice on the Oilers' defense if they would have won that, got that first overall that year. You know, the year that really was bad for everybody was the Yakupov draft. None of the players really in that draft have really turned out to be really good players. Maybe Morgan Riley has been the best of them, or Hampus Lindholm, who was taken afterwards, I think. But a lot of it's luck of the draw. It's a nice thing to get the first overall pick, but sometimes the best defenseman is second, third, fourth, and you look at that guy that's first overall, and you just got to take him.
Well, you know, just before I let you go, like Justin Falk was drafted 37th overall in 2010. I'm sure the Oilers had a shot at him. So there are those guys to get, and you have to be able to just get them, and that was the other problem for them is they weren't able to identify these guys. So that's, you know, if you can't identify the guys, then that's a problem. I think they're going to be a little bit better than that, but it just shows you can get some good stuff in second, third rounds. Go ahead, Ann.
Guys, well, anything beyond the first round, they've been terrible.
Yeah, very true. Guys, one of the biggest points of debate this season has been the race for the Calder Trophy. Certainly, Connor McDavid, despite his injury, is obviously back in the picture there, potentially for the Calder Trophy. How are you guys handicapping things right now? What do you think are they going to be the final three, and who do you think is going to come away with the trophy?
I would say that a guy that I would like to see in the final three is the Flyer defenseman. I don't know how to say his name, but Gustav Spear. he is a fantastic hockey player. I know him. I think he was a third rounder out of Union College. You talk about finding a defenseman, but he, mm-hmm. He's been. You talk about getting absolutely what you need. I've been so impressed with him, and I know there are some forwards are real good hockey players. But I'd like to see him in the final three. I'd also like to see Dylan Larkin in the final three out of Detroit. And I, if McDavid doesn't make it into the final three, I'll understand it. Watching him, I have no doubt he is going to be the best overall player over many years in this class. But I understand if he doesn't get that opportunity. I do understand it. I like the Chicago Blackhawk guy, but I'm going to go ahead and say that he's in a real good spot. So maybe I won't give him the Calder based on that.
Yeah, ever since Wayne Gretzky was disqualified for the Calder Trophy, that's been a curse on the Edmonton Oilers. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins should have probably won it the year that he was a rookie, but he was injured for part of the year. And Landeskog won the Rookie of the Year. And then this year, similarly, if McDavid would have played every game, it wouldn't even be a conversation right now with the pace that he's on. Having said that, Gustav Spear, the job that he's done in Philly with that defense, if they get into the playoffs especially, that's got to be a big feather in his cap because he's been a big part of that hockey team in the turnaround. How long has Philly been looking for a defenseman? We talk about the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
Philly has been looking for a marquee defenseman for a long time.
Not only that, it's the fact that the Flyers haven't developed their own homegrown defenseman. And, it's honestly, you can probably go back, oh, goodness gracious, the last one who had regular minutes that they drafted was Chris Therrien. And in terms of having a player on the level like Gossis there is, they haven't had a homegrown guy like this, in quite some time.
I thought you were going to say Jimmy Watson.
Well, I was waiting for Mark Howe, but okay.
Howe's an acquisition, so I'm talking about the guy
that's true. He played in the WHA as well, right, for the
Whalers. Exactly.
Yeah, and
so
I think Jack Eichel will be in the mix too, guys. I think Eichel will be in the mix, too. He doesn't have the same line mates as some of the other guys. He's got 22 goals. It all depends. I mean, these next 12 games are key. Like, everybody wants to say, well, it should be Gostisbehere, or, well, it should be Panarin, and everybody tries to sort of pin me to it because they know I have a vote. But I got to wait out the 12 games. A lot could happen.
Well the other thing, too, is you're voting on the best rookie, not the best player. So that's a totally different vote, right?
And the thing about Eichel is that it's funny, and it's really wildly unfair to him because, he could have been a rookie in any other year in the last, 10? And he would. He is a fantastic talent. I was watching him tonight, and he's a great passer. He's very fast. He's quite rugged. I don't think that is maybe shining through because we haven't seen him that much, but he doesn't shy away from anything. I think he's going to be – man, I think Buffalo got a great hockey player.
Yeah, I don't think they lost very much in getting Eichel over McDavid. McDavid is the better player, I think, but
yeah, he is.
That's a nice consolation prize, getting Eichel. I don't think you're going to look back 10 years from now and say, gee, we really, are down on our luck drafting Eichel. He's a fantastic hockey player.
Not bad. So when the new building opens, guys, is it going to be full or are fans getting a little fed up?
It's going to be full. I can speak from experience. The two things the Edmonton Oilers have had going for them in terms of keeping that building full during this extended rebuild is people have been waiting to keep their spot in the new arena. They want to keep their seats. They want to be in that new arena. They want to be sitting where they are. They've already done the placement of everybody in the arena. Some were happy, some weren't, as you can imagine.
Right.
Anytime you do something like that. I've got my two seats already saved and my deposit down. So I think if the team continues to lose and the novelty of the arena wears off, then look out. But I think the arena has bought them some time because the last 2-3 years, people have just been saying, you know, I've stuck through it this long. I don't want to give up my seats. Then they go into the new arena, and then I can't get seats in the new arena, and then the team will probably be good in 2-3 years. So a lot of that's been going on. But I think next year, and my thought has always been, and I've mentioned it on the show many times, my thought has always been that Daryl Cates, the owner, has told the team, the management of the team, that you better be a good team and you better be in the playoffs when that new building opens. And I firmly believe that. And that's why I think that they have to and they will make moves this summer to make themselves a competitive team that will be competing for a playoff spot next year.
I think that they, you know, and this isn't, I'm not saying this to be mean or anything. I just think Oiler fans are, they're all in, and they have been since, I don't know, 79 or whatever year it was. You know, I guess if all the people who saw Gretzky die off, then they have a problem. But this is an annual sojourn to the promised land, and you saw a little bit of it 06, and people got excited about it again. I cannot imagine maybe a massive downturn in the economy. Other than that, this team is, man, they're in the right spot. They're just loved. They are A, B, C, D through Z as far as importance in this city. They just are.
The only thing I question is they've added a lot of luxury suites, and with the downturn in the oil economy here in Alberta, I tend to wonder how many of those luxury suites have sold, if they've all sold, and then as well, how many companies went from holding 10 to 12 seats down to maybe 7, 8, 6 seats. That, of course, they'll never tell us. The one thing that the Oilers do have and have had for a while is they've had a season seat registry where they have fans on there waiting for the opportunity to get season seats. So there is a waiting list. And the new building has approximately 2,000 extra seats from the old building.
Okay.
So I'm sure a lot of that season seat registry is going to be eaten up. And then from there, it's how many cancellations they're going to have after, let's say, a year or two in the new building. If the economy still hasn't picked up, that's where you might see some problems.
Yeah. Guys, last question from me. Are the Oilers pretty much done at this point with Nail Yakupov? Are they still looking at, you know, at least another year and trying to see if he can turn the corner?
Well, I think Nail Yakupov is, I like him as a player. I cheer like hell for him, and I think he shows signs, and then he shows not signs. So I think he's the kind of guy that would drive a coach mad, but I also think the coach would see some promise in him. So if you're asking me, is he going to be traded this summer, I will say absolutely. By the way, I also said the same thing last summer.
Well, this is the first summer I'm saying that they will probably move on from him. The only thing that might keep him here is he makes $2.5 million, which isn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy does have talent. He has a lot of talent.
He plays defense now. I've noticed it.
Well, effort has never been an issue for him. It's his brain and jittery hands. You know, happy hands, happy feet. He gets the puck. He's got a stick handle 3 times before he makes a decision with it. He gets an opportunity to shoot. He's got a stick handle 2-3 times before he makes a decision with it. A lot of times he'll hang on to the puck too long, and then it'll die on his stick, which, you know, if you're a coach, that's a no-no. And it's tough for teammates to play with him.
Let me ask you, how often does he get a clean one-timer, though, on the power play? Doesn't seem like enough, because he probably has the best one-timer on the team.
But it's
problem
not
is,
accurate.
He's not on the power play. He's not on the power play all the time. And the problem is, he's not, a lot of times, he's not where he's supposed to be.
Okay.
You know, he freelances quite a bit. And I think that's an issue, not only in the offensive zone, but also in the defensive zone. And sometimes he tries to force things where there isn't a thing to force. And he doesn't use his teammates very well. Those are things that, you know, maybe as he grows older, he's going to be a better player at. The one thing I'm going to say is I don't think that the rookie GM, Craig McTavish, hiring a rookie coach in Dallas Eakins did him any favors when Dallas Eakins sat him out the very first game that he played.
Yeah.
And that I think, really played with the kid's confidence.
under Ralph Kruger, you got to remember, this is a kid that scored 17 goals in half a year.
I remember, yeah.
And since then, it's been all downhill.
Yeah, sometimes players need just a second team to look at and a second experience, and sometimes it just wakes them up, right? I hope the best for Neil Yakupov. I hope he scores 40 goals, and I hope it's in Edmonton. But I, you know, if they trade him this summer, I can't really say beyond what Paul said, which I do agree. I think they sort of didn't handle him well at times. But that said, if they do say goodbye to him, I don't think anybody can be terribly upset.
Well, let's say this: any team that takes a chance on him may get a player that turns into something decent. I'm talking maybe a 25-30 goal scorer for a long time.
Yes, I agree with that.
Paul Allen, listen, thanks for coming on. Everybody should listen to you guys at TSN 1260. I've been on your show. It's a great show. I've listened to your show. I wish you guys the best because I'm really tired of just bashing the Edmonton Oilers every time I'm forced to analyze them. So I'm hoping for better things for them.
So well, don't watch the draft lottery and no swearing.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, gentlemen.
All right, Ant, we'll probably go like 5 minutes in overtime, but let's talk about the Pittsburgh Flyers matchup. That's going to be a great matchup tomorrow, hotly anticipated. I will say that a lot of media who hasn't been out all year are starting to come out now to cover the Flyers. It's that time of the year. And so the building will be charged.
Yeah.
The one thing, there's a couple things that I've heard. First one is, and I've heard this on the radio too, that people are sort of downgrading Pittsburgh, like, well, you know, they're not playing that great. And it's like, wait a minute, they're on a pretty good roll right now. And Sidney Crosby is as locked in right now as I've seen him in the last 2 or 3 years. So there is that, while the Flyers are running hot too. So are the Penguins.
Yeah, I think they've responded well to Mike Sullivan again, former Rangers assistant coach, who's really, I think, you know, that either is a case of the Penguins were just absolutely just thrilled to not be under Mike Johnston anymore, and specifically Sidney Crosby, that they've responded well to anybody else's touch in this case than Mike Johnston's. So again, yeah, Crosby, certainly the switch went on, and we were talking about him earlier in the year, just how he just looked at times. I mean, didn't look himself, looked lost. They lose Malkin. Granted, it does make for a very interesting matchup situation. You would think on the face of it that Philadelphia would have some matchup advantages here, because then they'd have a choice, certainly, of being able to put, they don't have to worry about, without having to worry about Malkin. You can pretty much pick your poison with putting either the Giroux line out there or Couturier on a unit. And the thing is for Philly as well, I mean, they lose. I mean, Chris Vandeveld gets suspended for his hit on Jonathan Tazen, and fortuitously, Jake Voracek is back in the lineup and playing on a line with their cousin. So on the face, you would say, you would look at it and say, Philadelphia looks like they have an advantage here against Perp. But we all know, you know, It, as much as it drives Flyers fans crazy, I mean, Crosby, when he really wants to get a motor on and wants to will it, he can really show you what, you know, exactly what he's made of. I think it's going to be a tight game tomorrow. I fully expect it to be a close. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, at times that Philadelphia has blown teams out of the building either or during the streak. But in some ways, you learn a lot about a team when they are, you know, in these, you know, playoff-style games against good teams and winning and coming out and winning them. So they're ready. They look like they're ready and willing to grind. But, again, Pittsburgh's done well. I think certainly some of the acquisitions that they made, I think let's take a little bit closer look at Hagelin. I think the Hagelin acquisition turned out to be a pretty good one for them. I'd like to, you know, I just feel like he's a better fit there than he was in Anaheim.
Yeah,
at least from what I've seen of him there, and again, their team, this is going to be a battle. There's no question about that. I don't think it's a gimme game for the Flyers by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I was going to say, come back for those other people. We're going to go like a minute or two in overtime. The big thing for me is, and I saw this in the game against the Rangers, their speed has picked up tremendously. Their defense isn't any better, but getting Hagelin, getting Daly, getting Schultz has given them a lot more puck movement and a lot more speed down the ice. And so now even, like, Kessel has started is starting to catch on a little bit. And you know, it's funny, Nick Bonino is sort of playing the Malkin role and doing a pretty good job. And so you look at that, they've set up Fleury to be in net, and Fleury we know has been up and down against Philly, but lately, last couple of years, he's been better against them. And so I think as much problem as the Penguins are going to have with Gostisbehere, the Flyers are going to have with their speed.
Yeah, I think again, it's going to be a game where you anticipate that there's going to be chances traded, and again, it comes down to again when you're at home, you do have the advantageous matchups with line changes, things of that sort. So Dave Hackstall can roll out the configurations that he feels is going to work best. And again, Philadelphia's blue line, again, as we talked with Alan and Paul, you know how much different they look, obviously, with Shane Gostisbehere on that defensive core. He just makes him so much more dangerous in the back end. So the Flyers can, if they want to play fire wagon hockey, they can. I don't necessarily think it's in their best interest to do so. I think they can play a more of a controlled game in this case than they can expose Pittsburgh's the weaknesses that they're going to have down low potentially with some of their defense and being able to roll some of those guys out there to get in front of the net. Flyers have obviously a pretty physical, they've been playing very physical of late. Braden Schenn, Wayne Simmonds, both of them playing, particularly brawny games, I would say, the way they've been going lately. And I think Schenn's like seventh leading scorer since January in the NHL.
Yeah.
So he's been on the best roll of his career. You know, Pittsburgh's got their hands full, but again, it's not a game Philly can take lightly.
No, and I'll tell you, I'm not going to be shocked if it's 3-2, and I'm not going to be shocked if it's like 7-6 like it was in the playoffs a couple of years ago.
Could be. Could very well be. We could have a wild one down there. There's no question about that.
I just remember that game. It was impossible to try and cover because somebody would score. I'd type it out. I'd look up, somebody scored. Who was that? Who's that scored? I'd go type it out. Somebody else scored. It was like you just couldn't keep up.
I remember that. I remember that game well. I remember that game very well. It was crazy. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, well, great time of the year, great show. Again, thanks to Alan and Paul for coming on. And that's it for Off the Post.
We'll catch everybody next week.
Employers across the UK, however small the business, will soon have to offer a workplace pension. Don't ignore the workplace pension. It's the law. Visit workplacepensions.gov.uk.